Hello, welcome back, dear empath. We are breaking down the 50 signs you are dealing with a narcissist in this countdown. Each week, we're covering a different point. So number 47 this week, we're talking about they are extremely kind with strangers, and then they're a monster behind closed doors. Get your walking shoes on, get your headphones in, and let's dive into this topic. Welcome back to the Empath and Narcissist Podcast, where I share messages about spiritual healing from narcissistic abuse with human design. Because I believe your karmic experience has awakened you to your authentic soul, you just need the map to call your power back. I am your host, Raven Scott, and I'm an author and trauma-informed
spiritual mentor.
Narcissists mask. This is one of the biggest signs, and I think obvious signs we all know, but maybe we don't all know, that narcissists wear a mask. They are kind in public. They have social empathy. They know how to act, how to be polite, how to do all the things to look good on the outside. But they are a monstrosity in private. When they let their guard down, when they are who they truly are, and they know that you're comfortable in their grasp, they relax into this evil, dark entity person. I was going to say psychopath, but not all narcissists are psychopaths. So I refrained, but I said it anyways. You know, mine definitely borderlined that, and a lot of times, and I truly do think that there is dark entities that are surrounded by this. And you know, when we were out in public, I remember we would go over to his mom's house, we'd all be having fun, and we'd be bonding with his family, and he used to always kind of give me this cute pouty face when I'd say something cute, or I would praise him and kind of put him up on a pedestal, and he'd be like, "Aw, Ray," in kind of a condescending and doting voice at the same time. And then we would get back home and it would be kind of like, okay, we're home, we're settled in. Kind of like the switch would turn off, but I didn't really think about it at the time until now. There would be the switch, okay? So we get inside, we get home, we get relaxed. And then of course there would be the expectations of whatever activities we wanted to do that night. It was either sit together and watch whatever he wanted to watch, or most of the time it was start to drink and start to quote unquote party and have our kind of sexual ritual, I guess, for like, I don't know how many hours that he couldn't finish, and we did it. So, and of course there were lots of breaks in between, but it was still exhausting, and that's just not normal behavior. That's very much, I'm gonna cover another topic about sexual abuse and the bad habits and just the, I don't even know what to call it, indecency about the whole act, the transactionalness of the act, it being, but that's the thing. And so then he would be disappointed. He couldn't finish. You know, it'd be hours. I'd fall asleep, right? I'd either pass out because he would keep pumping with alcohol to like act more lively and fun and loose. And then of course it would get late. It'd be like 2 a.m. in the morning plus the alcohol. And back then I only weighed 110 pounds. So I passed out. So then he would get really mad. I would suddenly wake up because he'd be mad at me. And there would just be this rage. There would be this just, the way he treated me was not at all like I was a partner. Not at all like he cared for my well-being. He treated me like a hooker. He really did. It's like, he was paying me somehow for doing this act and I failed. And I'm sure you've experienced different ways that the narcissist behind closed doors will make your life difficult. Maybe they are physically abusive and they push you and grab you and, you know, bruise your skin and your arms because they've grabbed you really tight. And this public facade is what makes them, I guess, get away with this abuse. And it also confuses us because we keep thinking with this intermittent reward, we keep thinking, you know, they just had a weak moment. They're human. They're not perfect. They're going to get better, or they're going to go get help, or this won't happen again if I just don't do this. So it's really very toxic, this cycle. And the things that they do outside, some examples of how narcissists can be extremely kind with strangers, but transform into monsters behind closed doors, is also, you know, maybe they're charitable. They're a social narcissist. They're charitable acts. They may be highly active and volunteering work, philanthropy. Maybe it's even in their church. If they're in a religion, they're highly active. And they seek admiration. They seek validation from others. And they may engage in charitable acts or public displays of kindness to enhance their image and gain approval. This is just how it goes. Cult leaders, pastors, not that they're, well, all cult leaders, yes, are narcissists. Not all pastors are narcissists. But what I'm trying to get at is people in leadership, right? People who are very charismatic, who seem to get away with so much, aka Donald Trump, and yet people still love him and think he's like amazing. This is that narcissistic, out in the open in public, really great person. I mean, how many wives has he gone through? So obviously he's always throwing all of his family members under the bus. He's threatening. He's just a monster. You know what's so funny is I was watching Love on the Spectrum. It's the sweetest show on Netflix about autism, and it was the version over in Australia. So I think the first one they did, because there's also an American version. And this gal, she's on the spectrum, and this is why I love people on the spectrum, because she was so honest. She's like, yeah, well, I know I can have a relationship. She's like, anyone can have a relationship. I mean, weirdo Donald Trump, he can have a relationship. I can have a relationship. And I just laughed listening to her, because I guess that's her thing. She's really into politics. And it doesn't matter what side of it you're on. You may say that about, you know, someone on the Democratic side. Like, it's just this perspective of like, hey, like, he's a weirdo. He can have a relationship. I can have a relationship. I loved it. So it was hilarious. I was laughing literally out loud watching this sweet show. And the behind closed doors, these things, you know, these relationships break up for a reason. You have multiple divorces, not because you're a nice guy. There's multiple divorces for a reason. And this is the other thing that the narcissist will lie to the new supply, right? Like, my ex was just such a liar, so irresponsible, such a drama, you know, queen, whatever it is. Like, they're going to always blame them, and the fault is going to be the partner's, not theirs. So alas, they also are very polite and charming, charismatic. Like I said, we all can be charming and charismatic, but it's what you do with your character at home. It's what you do in those moments that are hard, right? You apologize. You take the next right steps to change. You emotionally grow. You take responsibility when you are not a narcissist. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, I kind of do this, right? We all kind of do some narcissistic traits in our shadow. But when it boils down to, are you really truly caring for the other person and have their best interests in heart and take your responsibility? You know, that's the things you need to focus in on. We're not perfect. You know, we have shadows, but if you're willing to work on them, then you're not. So in these settings, narcissists can be incredibly charming and charismatic. That's why sometimes people believe that all politicians are narcissists, which I don't agree with. But they also excel at making a good first impression. Good first impressions are what they thrive on, and they use their charisma to win people over and create a positive image of themselves. Even you, their partner, because that's what you kind of hold on to the whole time. They're like, yeah, but in the beginning, I've seen it. He can do it. He can be this. Yes, they can. But are they truly at their core? No, they're just acting to get you into that relationship. This behavior can be seen as generous. It can be compassionate and charming. And this charm offensive can make it difficult for others to see their darker aspects. But you, in private, you see it, you know it. And I remember explaining what the darkness, what would happen in those moments. I would come to work hungover, tired, exhausted, and just frustrated and hurt and betrayed. And all the women that cared about me, not all the women at work, but the women who could and cared about me, they really tried to help me and encourage me and tell me that that's not how someone should treat you. That's not real love. But when you're in the middle of it and you're so confused, and then you get blamed and shamed, and then your friend who's trying to help you, their character gets run through the mud, and there's this whole smear campaign, literally just one lecture smear campaign that the narcissist runs on them, it makes you then rely deeper into the trauma bond with the narcissist, and then you get further isolated away from that friend who's trying to help you. So my lesson that I learned and I wish to instill in you, if you are doubting yourself and your friends, you know, are encouraging you that this is a toxic situation, don't confer with the narcissist that you had this conversation. Confer with a professional. Confer with someone who can give you a neutral middle ground on what's happening, because you're just going to be more isolated, and the narcissist will really get ugly at home when you confront them about this. The thing with, I didn't know I was dealing with a narcissist. I had no idea. I just thought I was dealing with a normal high school guy that I met in high school, right? We were both high schoolers. And when they don't get their way, or someone's challenging their possession, which was me, or confronting that relationship, they can get really nasty to you and to the others. And so be careful with what you present to the narcissist. Maybe you could do it the first time as a litmus test. Hey, is this person willing to work on our relationship, or are they a narcissist? And then if they react like they start to discredit whomever's trying to help you, discredit what you're saying, and not take responsibility, then that's that red flag to not bring this up again with them, and to find professional help, and to start to drop boundaries and find your way to distance yourself to really gain clarity. Now, of course, all of this that I'm presenting to you is not a replacement of therapy. This is just my own personal experiences and thoughts, and help to empower you. Helping others for self-serving reasons is another one. Of course, the narcissists help people because it serves their ego, it serves their supply, and it serves their image. And they may help someone in order later, then sometimes they will help them as a tit for tat and then manipulate and exploit them, or to gain favor and admiration from others, and say, you know, at sea, they'll start to instill some abuse and get you to react. And then out of that reactive abuse, you explode, and then they get to point the finger and say, see, you're the crazy one. You need to go to therapy, not me. So, and you can say, fine. And you can go to, like, you need support, you need help from a therapist. And of course, you can get that anywhere locally. You can also get that online if you want, in the comfort of your own home. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/empath. But their kindness is not genuine. It's self-serving. And that's the hardest part to weed through. But they were so kind, but they did this. But look at the outcome. Look at their motives. Did they always get something from it? Or were they selfless about it a lot of times? The manipulative tactics behind closed doors that narcissists can employ are all about control. They're all about dominance. So I remember one time we were having a discussion about, God, I don't know. It was, again, like, this is always this dominance, dominion, but I don't even know how this conversation started, but in the end, we were talking about maybe like self-defense or rape or I don't even know how this came up, to be honest, you guys. It was so many years ago. But all I remember is that all of a sudden, he had me pinned down on the floor in our living room, and he was, you know, starting to like mount me, like he was going to, like, but I was on my belly. And it was like such controlling, such a manipulative thing. One side of my brain was like, this can't be happening. He's just like showing me an example of something. Like, he's not really going to do this. He's not really going to do this, I kept thinking. And then he like kept going further and further, and was like, he's like actually going to, like, without me wanting, like, rape me. but I mean, and then I was like, but I'm in a consensual relationship. I was like, how is this even possible? Like, my brain was going all over the place. I was like, what the fuck is happening? I don't even know. So, and then afterward, it was for control. He wanted to make sure that I knew that he could pin me down and he could control me and he could dominate me at any time. And this is what the narcissist does. This is the monster-like thing. And he got up and he was just like chuckled. He's like, see, it's so easy. Anyone can do that to you. So something about like, I don't even know if there was a lesson. It was just like, see, you're not safe anywhere. Not even in my own home. And I was like, oh my God. It's like, this is crazy. I feel like I'm in a crazy loony bin place. But yet, I still was so trauma bonded. I didn't think that was unsafe until he actually hit me. And then that's when I had resolved to finally leave. I mean, I tried to leave 7 other times, as you've probably heard multiple times. I feel like I say that a lot. But I want to assure you that it doesn't take the first time. If you're just new to this podcast, you're just new to this concept, and you're just starting to think about leaving, and you're not sure if you can, or you have one time before and you're like, I feel so dumb that I got, you know, I'm back. You're not alone. And the average time it takes to leave is about 7 to 8 times. I've heard also 12. So you know what? Even if it's more than that, it is okay. And of course, their social lack of empathy, like behind closed doors, is also a big telltale sign that they are narcissistic. They are a monster behind closed doors. They can fake empathy out in public because that's obviously how they've survived social skills throughout their lives. But when it really matters, when you actually need them, when you're in the hospital, when you're sick, when you really truly need them, they are not there for you. They don't show up. And I guess I'm thankful I don't have any of those stories that he, you know, I felt like he abandoned me and he didn't show up for me when I really needed him, because I didn't get in any accidents. I didn't end up in the hospital or anything. But the times that I needed him were those times where he was punishing me. And I guess, I mean, he started it. Sound like such an elementary school phrase. But he was the one that couldn't finish. And I was the one who was being very polite for all those hours and doing everything I could to help him finish. And then he couldn't. And then he took it out on me. So, I mean, of course, there's no empathy for like, oh, hey, babe, you've got to go to work tomorrow. And I know you're really tired. You know, I'm sorry. I'm not feeling it. Like, let's just go to sleep. I don't know if it was always like this feeling of failure to him, or he just needed to get that high, because I've only been with 2 people, and the other person I'm with, he'll be like, okay, I don't need to, like, you're fine, you're tired, it's okay, I don't need to. And I would always be like, no, like, you get yours too. And of course, it does not take that long at all when you're with someone healthy and whom you love. And so what I'm trying to explain through all of the mess of the bedroom talk is that they did, like, whatever it is, maybe it's not the bedroom, maybe it's all the chores in the house, maybe it's helping out with the kids, maybe it's whatever it is, and you need their empathy, you need them to be a team player, and they're not. That's another sign, right? That they're narcissistic. They're not helping out in the household as a team player. And they truly are unable to empathize with the pain and suffering of those around them. And they view others really as objects. I guess that's why there's such a big topic and a lot of common themes with narcissists and sexual abuse, is that they see people as objects. And once they have you, you're kind of like a little trophy on the shelf. And that's why they become monsters and relax, because they've got you. You're in the case and you're trapped and you're their possession. So it's almost this arrogant, like, I can do whatever I want to and you're not going to leave kind of attitude. So what we need to do as survivors and as empaths is we need to bolster up our self-esteem. We need to bolster up, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I don't deserve this. And find ways to get the courage up to leave. Because the more of us who don't put up with this behavior will then instigate hopefully, some type of revolution that this is not appropriate. Like, everyone who's acting like this, they don't get a mate. Everyone who's acting like this doesn't get what they need, right? And only out of discomfort, they don't get their supply. Only out of discomfort, they may then seek and get the help that they need to heal their wounds that has caused their narcissist behavior. But we cannot help them personally in a romantic relationship, because that's like the doll who is possessed, who is being drained, also hoping to then fix and fix their owner. It just doesn't happen that way. So really, in conclusion, the stark contrast between a narcissist persona in public and their behavior in private, it can be shocking, especially when you first experience it. You're like, did that just happen? I thought this guy was really nice, or I thought this girl was really nice. Like, did they just say that? Did they just do that? So it's shocking. So you kind of shake it off. You're like, oh, you just kind of justify it away. But we need to not ignore these signs. And it really serves as a stark reminder of the complex and often destructive nature of this narcissistic personality disorder. They trauma bond us, and then they use and abuse us, and then they put us on the shelf and discard us. So let's rise up together, empaths, and not put up with it anymore. This was number 47 out of the 50 signs that you were dealing with a narcissist. I hope that this helped you. And if you wish to gain more information, more healing, go to the link in the show notes to grab the free boundaries workshop. Or if you need somatic healing because you've just constantly triggered, I also offer a free somatic healing workshop there. And till next time, see you soon. Thank you so much for tuning in to the end of this podcast. And don't forget to subscribe and write a review. If you wish to dive deeper with me, you can buy my book, Empath and the Narcissist. It's a guide to heal childhood trauma with effective exercises and how to overcome narcissistic abuse, recover from PTSD, codependency, and gaslighting manipulations. There is a free boundaries workshop inside the book. You can grab that in the show notes. Until next time. Keep your unique light shining. We're broken, it's tragic. We're not all elastic, but maybe there's magic. Believe you could have it. And I know of sadness, the anxious and panic, the infinite vastness of all that is blackness.